This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Wells Tech. My name is Martin Spriggs, and you are listening or watching episode 47 for Tuesday, March 7th, 2017. Joining me, as usual, Sally Draper from New Ulm, Minnesota. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am very good, Martin. Happy to be joining you. And this would be our first official podcast in the month of March. I don't know if you were aware of the old saying, in like a lion and out like a lamb. Have you ever heard that one?
I am, yes.
Yep. I always look forward to March because I love to fly kites, and we look forward to the wind so that we could fly kites down in Mississippi. Not so sure I look forward to the wind that's happening in Minnesota today, though. We're supposed to have gusts.
Yeah, 40
like
or 50 gusts.
50, yeah. Really, really windy out there. One of those blustery days from Winnie the Pooh times or whatever.
So. God has provided a shelter, however, and the internet and the ability to, the technology necessary to do our 487th podcast. And I'm actually very excited about today's podcast, Sally, because you're doing most of the work.
Yeah, I guess that would be exciting for you. I am happy to be sharing today a little talk that I did recently in North Mankato, Minnesota, Jesus Loves Me Learning Center, there with the good parents of students in the area who were interested in positive things that you can do with your kids using the internet. I know we spend a lot of time, Martin, talking about internet safety and digital citizenship and things like that, and I think this certainly feeds well into those discussions, but maybe we overlook sometimes or downplay the positive things that you can do, and especially parents can do with their kids. So that was really what the focus of my talk was, and I thought I'd share a little bit from that presentation, kind of get some double play.
Tell us a little bit about the history of this. Have you done this before? Is this a variation on a previous something, or was this kind of fresh out of the can?
I actually have been there a couple of years ago. I spoke to the same group of parents, and it was more internet safety focused. And so, you know, I kind of commend them for bringing in speakers. I was one of three that they brought in. They had a medical doctor come, and they also had someone from Conquerors Through Christ come and speak to their parents group. And, you know, sometimes I think for congregations and schools, it can be kind of discouraging, maybe only the same, you know, five sets of parents show up for your meetings of this nature or whatever, but God certainly can work through it and can bless those families that do participate, and hopefully even those that aren't able to make it with the sharing of the information, say in a school or church newsletter or whatever it may be. So neat opportunity for me to relook at some of these things. I'm a little bit past the preschool, early child education age with my own children, but certainly have some reflection to look back on, and also just some of the fun tools that are out there that I'm aware of today that probably weren't around when my guys were little.
Yeah, and even in a couple years' time, probably a good refresher, because technology does change, new threats exist, mm-hmm. new tools for safety exist, so it's probably a good time to reevaluate every few years. And mm-hmm. boy, it sure would be nice if every parent had the information necessary to keep both themselves and their kids safe online, because it can be a dangerous place.
Yep. And again, my goal this time was positive things to do. And my presentation and all the resources that I talked about, I've actually saved out on a Google Sites page. And so we'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. And if you want to make use of these same resources or replay my presentation or point parents to it or whatever it may be, you certainly can tap into the resources that I've gathered for my presentation. So kind of started with the fact that those children's gears are definitely moving. They're making connections every time they interact with technology, and what you want to do is not remove them from it completely. I mean, obviously you want to have the right constraints on their use of technology and things, but instead our goal with our children had always been to teach them to have a discerning heart, a heart that could, you know, be exposed to all that the internet has to offer and make good God-pleasing decisions on how they use that and what they make use of. That's always been the focus in our family. You know, some things maybe were completely off limits to the kids, but we gave them a good reason for that. And, you know, other things that maybe they were curious about, we would explore it with them and help them to have, hopefully, that discerning heart at work as they looked at different things that were available to them. One of the main tools, and I emphasize this throughout my presentation, that I think is a great thing for parents to have in their back pocket and make use of on a regular basis, is a website called Common Sense Media. I actually have it up right here, and I'm going to talk a little more about it later in the show as well. But basically, they have information about all kinds of technology and their reviews and their recommendations for movies, books, TVs, games, apps, and websites. So if there's a particular thing you have a question about, you can come here, typically find it on the website and read their reviews and, you know, what age range they think it's appropriate for and what some of the cautions or concerns might be about different media. So again, I kind of emphasize that all throughout, that you do have this kind of an ace in the hole where you can't possibly know about all the different media content that's out there for children to consume and know whether it's suitable or not. But this nonprofit organization has put together an amazing resource. It's really deep. There's just tons and tons there. And I would definitely recommend checking out Common Sense Media, and it's .org, O-R-G, not .com, that gets you nowhere, but .org.
So we should probably note that Common Sense Media is not just a parent's resource, although it's an excellent one. There's a section there for educators as well, and we've referenced that before too. So if you are looking for internet safety curriculum, or courses for the classroom, it's there as well.
And I'll detail those things a little bit more later in the show. That's my ministry resource, so stay tuned for that.
Or you steal your thunder.
No problem. So I did have a few website recommendations for the parents in attendance, and again, kind of geared toward lower elementary, early childhood age range, since it was an early childhood center that I was speaking at. The first one was a website called Welcome to the Web, and it's a really fun little site. It's great for really any age, and it even will read to you if you don't have the reading skills for it quite yet. So you could probably start with second or third grade on up, and it goes through all different types of digital citizenship, safety, just some basics about how to use your browser and how to do wise searching and things like that. It teaches you how to copy paste and all kinds of other things that are just basic skills that are really useful. And it's set up in a very fun way. And in the end, you have a challenge, which is a little story about someone who's threatening to unleash a virus on the web. And you have to defeat them with all of your great internet skills in use. So I've used it multiple times and had very good feedback, and it's free and very easy to use. So recommend that highly. Definitely parents could do it with their children. I think it would be a real enjoyable experience and give you lots to talk about through the course of doing the Welcome to the Web. And then, you know, just kind of featured a few other early elementary, like PBS Kids, and ABC has great learning games for kindergarten and even pre-K through fifth grade. And also Starfall, which is a great site for phonics-based reading, starting with just early recognition of the ABCs all the way through up basic reading, chapter book kind of things there on their website. So just a few to keep in mind. For mobile app recommendations, Martin, you probably won't be surprised by these. For kids, I recommended the Bible app for kids, which is done by our friends over at YouVersion. have a very popular Bible app for adults. They also have a really well-done Bible app for kids, and you can have it read to you, and then you can click into the pictures and interact, make the monkey laugh, or whatever it is that is on the screen. There's activities at the end where you can do coloring pages or matching or whatever to kind of reinforce the Bible stories that are there. So very well done from the YouVersion folks over at Bible.com.
What age group would you suggest is probably optimal for that particular app?
Well, I think you could go as young as, you know, your pre-Ks, your 3 and 4-year-olds, since it'll read it to them, mm-hmm. and go on up to those early readers so they can read along with it, maybe through 3rd grade or so.
Okay.
And yeah, I got a cough. I'm going to hang on for 1 second. Sorry about that. All right. So next up, another fun one that I recommended is Granny's Bible Dojo. I talked about this a long time ago on the show, Martin, and it just made me smile to open it up on my phone and play a little bit of Bible Dojo. So the idea is that this grandma is teaching you how to do karate, and you have to chop the blocks of wood that have the correct Bible names in order. And as you chop one, then others are revealed underneath. And it gets pretty hard to beat all the training rounds as you get into some of the latter books of the Old Testament, and they stack them up, you know, over your learning process. You have to remember all of the Old Testament and be able to chop the blocks in the right order and things. So it's a very fun app for kids to reinforce learning the books of the Bible in order.
Yeah, I even recommend for early on, you know, catechism class mm-hmm. type things, just kind of getting sick and just kind of a fun way to get them started.
Yep. There's books to read on your mobile device as well. So that's just a few. Obviously, there's tons more out there that you could do with the mobile devices, but a couple that were Bible-oriented that I wanted to make sure and mention to the parents. And then finally, I shifted into the big idea of my presentation, which was to engage with your children as they explore the internet. So do things with them and, you know, be their model and help them to use the internet wisely and use it for research or creating things or sharing things, but, you know, keeping that discerning heart at the center of all of that. And so a few examples that I shared from our parenting history, one of which is the Hank the Cow Dog book series, which is just a fun series of books set in West Texas and written by the man who's pictured on the screen if you're following along with the video. His name is John Erickson, and we had read a lot of his books. I think he's up to like number 65 or something in the series at this point. And we had one in particular that was our favorite. And so we decided we'd write him an email one day and went to the Hank the Cow Dog website and wrote him an email. And that afternoon we had a reply directly from the author, and he talked to us. We told him what our favorite character was, this Mary D. Cat from the Vampire Cat book. And he told us about a real cat he had fashioned it after and things like that. So just a really neat way for us as parents to connect our children to the person behind this book series that we just love and had read so much of. So just one example. I also talked to him about geocaching. We've mentioned this multiple times on the show, where there's basically hidden treasure in the woods or in your city or whatever that you can use your GPS device. Now mobile devices all have GPS built in for the most part, and find these treasures and sign a log, and you do all of this via the internet. You keep up with your stats and things like that. And because of geocaching, we've gone to some pretty amazing sites. We had made a decision to go off the road, the beaten path, the trek that we were taking north-south, to go into Kentucky to get a cache in the state of Kentucky, because a lot of it has to do with your stats and things. We ended up at this location where this gigantic cross was, and that's where the geocache was. Had no idea from reading the geocache description that that would be the case, but it was such a blessing to our family you know, to go find that geocache and discover this beautiful cross. It overlooked three rivers, and it was just beautiful. So other fun spots along the way, like the one where we found all the statuary and stuff. I want to say it was in Butte des Mortes, Wisconsin, that we found this place and the geocache there. So definitely a fun family activity. Have you guys ever geocached, Martin?
We had a long, well, no, long time in internet years, I guess, or technology years. But yeah, when the kids were in grade school, that's kind of when it was big. And we did, you know, quite a bit. You know, there was a couple summers. Obviously, it's a little more challenging in winter. But we had some nice expeditions. Not anywhere. Well, we did a couple on vacation where you'd find them at a rest stop or those kinds of things. So that was kind of fun. And we did plan a couple short kind of long weekends to do that. So yeah, it was awesome. We haven't done in a long time, of course.
No, yeah. So. I had to admit my boys were always the pasty white nerds who wanted to stay inside glued to their computers. And so it was a really neat thing. They could do the tech side of things and figure out which caches to find, do web searching and things like that. And then we all got to benefit from this great outdoor activity. So.
Yeah, this was, we were doing it back in the day where you had, you know, just these standalone GPSs,
not we had a Garmin.
Smartphones of today, which probably make it a lot more fun even.
Definitely. More interactive. Yeah, definitely. All right, we took a turn in the Draper household of doing family blogging. One Christmas, we wrote a blog for my parents down in Mississippi. And every day, someone was responsible for writing a post on the blog. And they got some real creative blog posts going there. This one's titled, "Did You Know That Walmart's Come Equipped with Mechanized Zombie Ninjas?" So I didn't know that until I read what my son had to say about it. But it was a fun event for us to do that for my parents. So
very interesting. That's
yeah,
kind of spread the load too, so somebody doesn't get overwhelmed, especially
exactly
if you're on vacation. I can envision something like that in a classroom or small group setting too.
We did our share of computer programming at our house as well, and encouraged the boys and supported them as they were learning more about programming techniques. They use Scratch quite a bit, and certainly code.org has got some really great games that would be appealing to kids now, including Minecraft and Frozen games. So, you know, it's not up to the teachers alone to introduce kids to coding. Parents certainly can jump in there and do these things with their kids. I would bet they'd even have fun doing it and learn right along with them. So very good way for you to engage with your children and encourage them. And I talked some about some videos we self-produced. There was a time when we put together a true Christmas story, a true Easter story. The kids painted backgrounds and recorded the narration and made puppets and all kinds of things. And just kind of teaching them that they can let their light shine with the tools that they have available to them, like publishing videos on YouTube. And then lastly, in my presentation, I touched a little bit on the maker movement and how doing DIY electronics type projects is easier than ever to do. There's the Make Zine. So Make is a magazine centered around the maker movement, and you can get it online, and they have a whole section dedicated to kids and families. So lots of great ideas for making things. And there's other tools that are out there as well. We've talked about different robotics and things like that. I actually demoed for them a Makey Makey, and you'll have to hang on till the end of the show to watch our featured video this week about the Makey Makey. Pretty amazing what you can do with some alligator clips connected to this board, and would be a great learning project for a family to undertake as well. So that's a little bit of a rundown on what I shared with the good folks in North Mankato a week or so ago, and just some ideas to encourage parents to help their children develop that discerning heart, to help them know that there are good things that they can use the internet for, and to understand the differences when there are cautions and such.
Very refreshing. I think that's you know, an important aspect of using things that God has provided us, is not always just to necessarily be on our guard, but to look for the blessings that are embedded there too. So very nice. Very nice. So you're going to make that presentation available on our show notes page, right?
Absolutely. I have it all set up on a Google site, and so I'll link to that on the show notes, and you'll have the presentation and all the links that I talked about.
Very nice. So we should probably move along. The next segment in our show is normally news and tech, and we kind of touched on this piece of news last week that Amazon's S3 storage, which holds a whole bunch of assets that make up the internet, was having a little hiccup last week, and we found out why.
Yeah, it actually caused us a little bit of pain because some of our favorite sites were down last week, and we just talked about it on our show. It had just come back up, actually, when we recorded last Tuesday. Later in the week, they announced that it was human error. It was actually someone in their company who was debugging an issue with a billing system, and they accidentally took down more servers than they intended, and that kind of cascaded. There was a domino effect that took off other server subsystems and so on and so on, and it just kept going. And I just kind of had to pause at hearing that, because that does make you a little disconcerted to think you're trusting all this data to the cloud as we've moved more and more of our lives there. And one person was able to bring down these major websites in this way as these systems had to reboot and get back online.
So it was the human's fault.
Yeah. I think it said something about taking steps to not have that happen again. But
that's right. And I think the issue, finally, at the end of the day, the issue was Amazon is going to take a look at how to speed up the reboot process for you.
Sure.
Rebooting our laptops can be a painful process, but when you have to reboot servers upon servers and they all rely on each other and other people are relying on them, more of a complicated problem to solve. So
definitely.
All right, let's move on to Wells Now.
And I will share my screen for this segment, because we will definitely be pointing you to this page on the Wells.net website that features the movie A Return to Grace, Luther's Life and Legacy. This is a brand new movie that's being released this year in conjunction with the 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation. And actually, it was produced through Wells and is being offered to Wells congregations to host a screening in a movie theater in their area. So they've joined with a company called Tug that will help you set up these private movie screenings. And you can actually go out to Wells.net, read about it, and get to the Tug registration form right there from Wells.net. It's pretty easy to do. You pick a theater, a date and time for your screening, and they handle the logistics, and then you just advertise it to your members, encourage them to attend the special event. They have all kinds of resources to help you do that. And if you reach a threshold of advanced ticket sales, then the screening is confirmed and it's held in your area. And it's not a cost to your congregation. I think even some of the ticket sales come back to your congregation potentially.
Right. Exactly.
So it's kind of a win-win-win, and you get a theater experience of viewing A Return to Grace. We expect that it will be widely distributed later in the year, but this is kind of a pre-screening that you get to host in your own hometown. So check it out and consider doing that in your congregation.
Very cool. I have heard the other day that anybody who is attending the Synod Convention this year, which is at the end of July, will there be a screening convention as well? So we have that to look forward to.
Awesome.
And that'll be more in general release once Reformation hits. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a private screening. You can make it a community and invite neighbors and kind of as an outreach tool as well. So take advantage of that. I've heard the trailers look awesome. I have not seen the film yet myself, but I'm really looking forward to that. So take advantage of a very special event, this 500th to the Reformation.
Excellent.
Sally, let's move on to our picks of the week. What's your pick this week?
Well, my pick this week comes from our friends at Google, believe it or not. And Google has added a new feature to their Google Docs, and it's related to Google Keep. So maybe I should back up and explain what Google Keep is. Google Keep is their note-taking web app, and it allows you to write to-do lists, checklists, add images, embed links, all kinds of things like that, similar to Evernote and Microsoft's OneNote. And it's been kind of a standalone product. Here's a little look at a Google Keep screen. You can label things, you can archive and trash things, you can move lists around. If it's a checklist, you can check items off the list, whatever your desire is. It's pretty easy to use and very visual and fun to interact with. That's Google Keep. Now in Google Docs, you can access your Google Keeps, and it's found in the tools menu of a Google Doc. There's something that's labeled Keep Notepad. And when you open that up, it opens up in the sidebar on the right, and it shows you all those things that you have in your Google Keep window. And you can easily drag those things right into your Google Doc and even check them off, I believe, in your Google Doc. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But you can edit them in your Google Doc. Perhaps I need to write down that I need to record a podcast. And there's a way that says update. And I'm not seeing it readily available to me, but I think that you can make it sync back to your Google Keep. So I played with it, but now I don't see it on this checklist item. So anyway, the concept is that it would go both directions. I'm just not the best at demonstrating it, apparently. But it is nice to be able to take notes real casually in the Google Keep and then be able to easily incorporate those notes right into Google Docs. So new feature for Google Docs and kind of a game changer for Google Keep. They've upped the ante a bit, and it's more integrated with the whole G Suite of tools. So that's my pick of the week.
Very nice. Google Keep is cross-platform, so it's not only web, but you can. It is an app on
mobile devices too.
On mobile devices, both iOS and Android. So
excellent.
Which is kind of important these days when you're looking for an app like that. So mm-hmm. I would say it competes with Evernote and OneNote. I would say it's Google Note or iOS Notes or Apple Notes as well. I would say it's maybe a little bit more simple, and that's what some people are looking for as well. Just kind of like get out of the way. Just let me, you know, track some stuff, and works pretty well that way.
So here I am back really quickly. I highlighted the text, and if I right click, then I have the option to save to Keep Notepad, and it actually made it a separate checklist. It didn't integrate it with my original one, but it is over there in Keep. And if I go back to Keep, I can see it there as well. So that's the trick.
All right. My pick of the week is a YouTube channel called Snap, Snap, Snap. And I've been getting a little bit more into mobile photography the last few months and ran across this site. It kind of was started as a kind of a promotional channel for an app called Camera Plus was one of the first out there, a very good app that does a lot more than kind of the built-in camera that is available on the iPhone. I like the channel because the guy that basically is the spokesperson on it, Jack Hollingsworth, guy who lives down in Austin, a professional photographer, basically kind of spent a year or two just living predominantly with his mobile phone. And what he did on the channel is he kind of had these 7 to 10 to 12 minute short videos on how best to do mobile photography. Talk about taking better foodie pictures or shoot close-ups and macro photography or using the manual controls. He talks about how to take vacation photos, developing a personal style, portrait photography, landscape photography. He just does a nice job. He's got a kind of casual style, And I found all of these videos to be extremely helpful in kind of amping up the skill set for using your mobile phone, which has these days a very good camera built right into it. And I think he proves through the course of the series of videos that can rival in certain situations that DSLR. And the benefit, obviously, of using your mobile phone is it fits right in your pocket or purse. It's not a big thing you have to carry around. It's something you have with you. It has advantages like geotagging, so you know exactly where the picture was taken. You have the advantage of maybe posting to social networks right away, sharing that kind of stuff. The viewfinder, the size of the screen is usually better than a DSLR or other kind of camera, point and shoot. So there are some benefits of doing this. It doesn't fare as well in low light, but even has videos on that kind of. So I would say, in general, he doesn't have a lot of videos there. I forget the total dozen or dozen and a half photos here, videos, but really worth kind of going through, even if they kind of focus on the Camera Plus app. I think almost everything applies to just using the regular app on the iPhone or an Android. It really matters, mobile photography in general. So I would say worth to look that channel up. It's called Snap. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Snappy title. Very good.
Yeah, very cute.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our ministry resources segment, Sally.
And I have mentioned already in the show that Common Sense Media is a superstar in my book when it comes to helping parents evaluate all types of media for children ages 2 to 18. They have reviews on movies, books, TVs, games, apps, and websites. So you can click on a particular area, maybe zoom in on a particular age range. If you're looking for something for your 10-year-old, for instance, you can find out some of the things and what their ratings are. You could sort the list perhaps by the most popular or the highest rated and see, you know, some ideas for your kids to distract them from something that you really don't want them doing and instead look at some apps and things that are more appropriate. But it's not just their reviews. They have those all available here. They also have areas where they show their top picks in all different areas and different family guides, so essential apps and books and TV and things like that. They have articles and things to support you as you're if you're concerned about areas like screen time. There's a whole section of their website dedicated to how much screen time is appropriate for different age levels and things. Maybe you're concerned about certain social media or learning with technology or whatever your interests are. They have advice areas for parents and caregivers and for advocates. All kinds of great content here. It's just amazing how much is here. But as you mentioned, Martin, it's not just for parents. There's also an area for educators. And I was really excited to see how vast their resources are. So they have digital citizenship and literacy for students, so a whole curriculum around digital citizenship. And they have reviews and ratings for classroom apps and sites and things like that. They have things about teaching strategies like game-based learning or using video in the classroom or digital classroom management and also even professional development. They have some courses they've created that you can take online. They have a full archive of webinars that they've done. I was really excited by some of the titles that were available here in the webinar area, collaboration in the digital classroom, increase student learning with these classroom management tools, implement digital citizenship across your district, and on and on. They've got lots and lots of resources here. Really probably something for everyone, and they have a great search tool to help you find it. So as an educator, if you're looking for different resources, they have it all based on standards and things. They have lesson plans available. please do check out Common Sense Media. One area that I found that I was excited about is they have an area where they have posters and things. So you can download posters to use in the classroom, like some kind of signal of whether the device should be on their desk right now, a red, yellow, green light, and an explanation of that for as a handout for the students. So that's just one of many downloadable posters that you can get from Common Sense Media as well. So take some time and dig around. I think you'll be really pleased with what's available here as parents and also as educators.
Yeah, I remember when this site was really just kind of a podunk site with a limited number of resources. They've grown a lot.
Yeah, very deep.
They are an independent nonprofit. So they rely on donations, and I'm sure some federal funds come their way too. But I did notice that when you go to the site, you have a chance can sign up for an email to get on an email list. They say get age-based movie reviews, app recommendations, and more for your kids. Email you'll actually read, and that sounds like a good deal. So
yeah,
I would definitely check it out.
You can also submit your own reviews of things. So they have the reviews organized by their reviews, reviews by parents, and reviews by kids. So you can read what kids are saying about different things. Cool. Very well done.
My ministry resource is entitled the blog post Lenten Inspiration, but basically I think there are opportunities during these seasonal parts of the church year, Lent, Easter, Advent, those kinds of times of year to highlight different topics or different programs through the use of imagery. And there are lots of places to find imagery, but sometimes you just need a little bit of inspiration to figure out maybe what kind of things should I put on my website, or what kinds of images might go on a social media post, Facebook or Twitter? What might we use to highlight a Bible study or a sermon series or a certain event, Advent by candlelight, whatever? And one resource that I've kind of really appreciated over the Lent season here is Instagram. Now, Instagram was one of the things we featured on this show when we first started our series on social media for this school year. And one way to kind of see what's available in a particular seasonal category is through hashtags. So I was playing around with doing some searches on Instagram. And one of those hashtags for Lent would be, and this is pretty common pattern to use, hashtag Lent and then the year that you're in, so Lent 2017. And I just found, you know, they have a listing of how many posts show up with that hashtag. 10,219 posts come up when you search for the hashtag Lent 2017. And some of these are, you know, not appropriate for the tag that's been provided. And you'll get that, I think, when you search Twitter as well. But many of them are, you know, beautiful imagery, kind of creative ideas of how to maybe use an image and a theme or a Bible passage. There are pictures of crafts. There are pictures of cards. There are just general pictures with verses, just verses in general. So if not just for personal growth or professional use, there's personal growth opportunities here too. And I was really inspired looking through some of these things, especially on Instagram. Another part of that is not just kind of seeing what other people have done, but giving you ideas for what you might be able to do in a kind of a social networking way, or a blog post, or a sermon series, or on-screen kind of things. And I think I've talked about this product in the past, and I'm kind of doing a little bit of an experiment over Lent here to try and create my own. So what I'm doing is using a tool called Adobe Spark, and it has three different components to it. It has post, page, and video. Video is pretty obvious. Page, it has to do with more blogging. And post has to do with creating these little images that you can do for all different kinds of social media sites. And they'll give you the templates for them. They'll give you some design ideas, color palettes, backgrounds, different way text on here. If you're following along at home on the video, this is one that I posted today. I just took a picture that I took about 4 years ago on a vacation out in New Mexico and added a Bible passage. It formatted it in the square format, and there's a quick, easy share button that'll send it right out to Instagram. You can add your own comments to it, and they've just made it real easy to kind of take it from this concept to publishing. And they have all the template sizes available for different kinds of social networks, which I thought was really helpful when you're trying to figure out how this would fit on a particular social network. So Instagram's available, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, regular old blog post. Then they even have social profiles. So the profile image for Facebook or your page cover or your Twitter header or your LinkedIn cover or your YouTube thumbnail, even an Etsy cover. So it kind of does that dirty work for you. You don't have to know what the pixel sizes are, the dimensions. It will resize the image or crop the image to that exact size and give you all the tools necessary to kind of take that image and make it something special for your own use. So I found that along with the inspiration provided by Instagram, just kind of a nice combo to get some of these images out there and have some fun too. So that is, there is a blog that goes along with this, and I do a little screencast on the blog post as well that walks you through some of those steps. But just kind of a fun thing to do in a seasonal kind of scenario like we are right now, where you can get some good images or find images that either you take or you find elsewhere and a Bible passage and post it, minister that way.
So. Awesome. So are you going to be just trying to do that during Lent? Is that what I heard you say?
Yeah, for now, I'll see how it goes. I've got a bunch of archived images I've taken over the years that could be repurposed, find some that are appropriate and attach the a relevant Bible verse, and I'll post it out there, see what happens.
Yep.
I've done two so far, so I'll maybe try for every 2-3 days, get one of them out there, and just have a little fun.
Excellent. All right.
You mentioned your featured video already. You teased it a little bit. Makey Makey.
I did, and I guess I didn't have an idea of what all a Makey Makey could do for you. We've talked about it on the show in the past, but the Makey Makey comes along with some alligator clips. It's a circuit board, and you hook the alligator clips to things that are conductive, and you can control your computer by them. For instance, with this banana, you can type and, control video games or whatever it may be. Apparently Play-Doh is conductive, so you can have a Play-Doh game pad and touch the Play-Doh and complete the connection that way. I think you just really need to watch this video because it gets better and better. And there's someone who does Dance Dance Revolution with buckets of water to dance in because water's conductive, and it just goes on and on. I will mention there are cats in this video, and cats even participate in it. So,
fair warning.
I think it's an inspiration for us who are wannabe makers to try out the Makey Makey board. So consider what you can do with it, and be amazed at what people have come up with, because there's some fun stuff here.
And there's only been 5.6 million views of this particular video, so it must have something going for it.
Yeah, the cat, I'm telling you.
Impressive, yes. Well, Sally, that's going to about do it for this week's show. We are going to return next week for episode 488. And I mentioned that social media and ministry series we'd been running over the course of the school year. And we're going to continue to do that, this time focusing on two of kind of the big hitters in photo sites, and that's Flickr, of course. It's been around, probably the grandfather of all photo sites, and Google Photos, which is the one that I use right now. So we're going to kind of take a stab at how those work and why we put them in this social media category, because they truly are. So we're going to come back next week and talk a little bit about that. Exciting stuff.
Should be fun.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, Sally, for joining as usual.
Thank you.
Well done. And we will see you next week. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And blessings on your Lenten journeys. Bye-bye.